Hello and welcome to the Majlis Radio for Europe, Radio Liberty's current affairs podcast focusing on Central Asia. I'm Mohammed Tahir, the host of the Majlis podcast and Radio for Europe, Radio Liberty's media manager for South and Central Asia here in Washington, D.C. Tajikistan is headed to the polls next week, which is outcome somewhat already predictable. The polling is for to elect the new parliament, which is dominated by the ruling party members, and it's expected to stay as such. However, with the Islamic Renaissance Party banned and out in exile, the most notable opponent seems to be the Socialist Democratic Party of Tajikistan, which its candidates are competing under highly unusual circumstances. As I said, experts are almost certain what is coming out of this, yet the election is still important, given the rise of Rustam Imom Ali, the son of President Rahman, to the position of influence ahead of presidential elections later this year, and growing economic challenges in the country. So we are here to look into how the elections and the campaigning is taking place, the possible outcome, most importantly, what it means to the country and what is next. To discuss all these, I'm joined by Anthony Boyer, Europe and Eurasia Advisor at the International Foundation for Electoral System, joining us from Washington, D.C., Mohammed John Kabiri, the Director of Foundation for Intercultural Integration, who is also the personal assistant of Muhyiddin Kabiri, the leader of banned Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan, is joining us from Europe, Sirajuddin Tolibov, Managing Editor of Freedom for Europe, Freedom Liberty's Tajik Service with us, and Bruce Spanier, the Editor of Freedom for Europe, Freedom Liberty's Central Asia Blog, Kishlok Awazi. Thank you, colleagues, for joining us today. So, Sirajuddin, let's start with you. The former presidential candidate, Ainihal Babanazarova, seems has already lost faith in this process, saying that this won't be fair and free process. So, what's happening on the ground and how the campaigning has been taking place so far?
So far, we didn't see any improvements compared to the previous elections. Nothing has happened. Nothing has changed. And things going as usual, and no one cares about the elections, the forthcoming elections on the 1st of March. Many people do not know even the date. You can see only a bunch of slogans, portraits of candidates in the centers of big towns and cities. Apart from that, you do not feel that election campaign is going on. Although the pre-election campaign has been announced a while ago, some parties even do not have enough money to register their own candidates. I'm talking about the Social Democratic Party, which is the only open opposition party at the moment inside Tajikistan.
Yeah. And also, Sirajuddin, with, you know, drawing comparison between this and the previous elections, I heard one thing to be different, which is the use of social media in the campaigning process.
Yes, I saw it. It is mostly used by the ruling party again. The majority of funds belongs to the party, and other five parties also are seen as a pocket party's puppets. Unfortunately, the whole system, the government executive system, all of them working for the ruling party, the People's Democratic Party of Tajikistan, which is led by president himself.
Sirajuddin, when you look into the way the ruling party candidates are campaigning, what's your impression? Do they take this to be a serious competition?
They prepared all grounds, you know, to get the majority seats in the parliament. Probably at least 50 seats will be theirs, and then a few others will be, you know, preserved to other small parties. And nothing unexpected is expected at the moment.
Talking of the smaller parties, Mohammed John, the Islamic Renaissance Party is not on the ballot. Do you see anything different in the process compared to the previous elections when you look into this process from the opposition lenses?
Unfortunately, as Mr. Sirajuddin said, there is nothing different comparing to others, except there is no RPT participation at the current election.
Did you try to participate?
Actually, yesterday, RPT and the National Alliance of Tajikistan, they put a statement, and they made a statement on favor of Social Democratic Party. They asked their followers to support, to vote for the Social Democratic Party. But I don't think there will be any serious change or outcome from this election. And probably as a previous parliament, the majority will be dominated by the ruling party, People Democratic Party, and some seats will be for other pocket party, as Mr. Sirojuddin has mentioned it. And I'm afraid that even they won't allow Social Democrat to enter the parliament.
So you are saying that this is this staged process, but still you are indirectly participating by asking your followers in Tajikistan to support Social Democratic Party. Why you are doing that? If you don't recognize this, why you just boycott it?
To be honest, I wasn't in the process where they decided this. As I said, I'm not holding any political position. But it is unclear for me. Maybe because of the majority of supporters for the RPT, they decided somehow to participate at the election rather than ban it. But I think it doesn't make any sense participating, taking part at the election or not, because everything has been already appointed before. As you see, many ministers was resigned and they were nominated for the upcoming election parliamentary, and they will they already reserved seats at the parliament from the democratic from the ruling party.
Anthony, maybe you could jump in here. As Sirojuddin was saying, that Social Democratic Party of Tajikistan is the only one with its independent position among the parties on the ballot. So the rest is kind of same people pretending to be competing under different groups, all loyal to the ruling party. So the leader of the Social Democratic Party, Zairov, making some headlines lately with his fiery remarks about the process, especially talk about some irregularities, particularly slow walking of the registration of his candidates and the distribution of financial incentives. Of course, as the election watchdog, you guys are paying attention to this. So what is your observation on the level of technicality so far?
Well, Mr. Zairov is, of course, a well-known politician. He's been, while oppositional, he's certainly been less vocal in many respects in the past in terms of the criticisms of the government. I think that's what's allowed him to keep operating, if you will, albeit on the margins politically. The election law has not appreciably changed since the last elections 5 years ago. Of course, we had a referendum a couple of years ago that modified some aspects of election administration. There are fewer members of the Central Commission on Elections and Referenda now, down from 15 to 7 so-called professional members, which are still largely comprised of persons loyal to the PDPT. But on the issues of disputes and violations in campaign finance, there have not been substantive changes at all. And when you talk about the extraordinarily high fees that are imposed upon candidates running, both for the majoritarian seats as well as the proportional seats, and even more so for any independent candidates, there are very little means to take reliably to dispute these. The Election Commission and the courts have jurisdiction over electoral complaints, but they're not known for being terribly efficient or for being terribly transparent. And it's issues such as these that have caused, would be considered the main international observing organization, at least from the Western sense, the OSCE, ODIHR, not to deploy a normal mission of observers. In fact, they'll be sending only a smaller election assessment mission to monitor compliance with the existing law. But they have expressed dissatisfaction with the lack of reforms and lack of action on recommendations made after previous elections to the Majlis-e-Namai undergone 5 years ago.
Anthony, also, maybe it sounds a little bit a political question, but then I couldn't help to follow up with this. Given the superiority of the ruling party candidates in this process, why the authorities are creating obstacles against Social Democratic Party? I mean, why even bother creating some obstacles against them?
Well, it gets to the question, perhaps, of why bother having an election if we go down that same route. I mean, it's the sense is that, you know, there's a sense of overcompensating to try and limit political challengers. We've seen this in various other arenas as well. For example, the prosecution of several members of former Mayor Ubadullayev's team potentially as a signal to keep him in check for any further political aspirations he may have. I believe he is going to be leaving the Majlis-e-Mili after elections of the upper chamber as well. later this next month. And we've seen in terms of historical precedent in Tajikistan, this issue of overdoing things, meaning going above and beyond to limit the opposition, whereas one would suspect at least they would desire a semblance of legitimacy if there were oppositional members. We recall, of course, and my colleague Mr. Kabiri knows very well about the two members, these symbolic members of the IRPT that were left in elected in the last elections and then before they were outright banned. Even that was barely symbolic, but the authorities really don't want to even allow even a semblance of opposition to be taking root or to be seen to be challenging or representing a viewpoint different from that of the PDPT and the other pro-presidential parties.
Mm-hmm. Bruce, the only political party which is different than the other parties in this election, the Social Democratic Party of Tajikistan, how much of an opposition is this, the way you see it?
Yeah, well, I mean, as Anthony said, they've kind of been held down. They're allowed to exist because they keep such a low profile, you know, and that's certainly we've seen why that's true. Rahmatullah Zahirov has been beaten, you know, on the street before, and he's certainly been sent a pretty clear message. Obviously, the government didn't say we're the ones that beat him up, but it's pretty clear that they have a very limited space to work in, and they probably won't get any seats. But, you know, again, I suppose, you know, following up on what Anthony was saying a minute ago, that they're allowed to exist because they probably because the government can say we do have a genuine opposition party, even though the opportunities that they have are so limited that there's really not much that they can do except stand in as a genuine opposition party with really no hope of getting seats in parliament.
Surajuddin, I think you guys had the Tajik service kind of long conversation with Zahirov. When you ask him this question, that he knows that he's not going to win, right? So why even to bother to participate in this election? What's the objective that with his participation, he's legitimizing this process?
No, he is not going to legitimize, as he said. He wants to raise the alarm to show the world community that not everything is good in Tajikistan. Tajikistan going towards the authoritarian rule, and this rule is becoming stronger and stronger. And he is warning by trying to take part in the elections. This is what he said. He even mentioned that they were so financially poor that they were forced to sell their own car in order to be registered, to register their own candidates. And they managed to put deposit only for five of the candidates. As you can see, and no financial institution was willing to give them money to support financially, even a debt loan. So, but, you know, his strong will also is a sign of resistance within authoritarian society. And if genuine elections take place, I'm sure he would get a lot of support. People know about him and his party.
So other than the Social Democratic and the ruling party, how many other parties that we are talking about now, and then you also kind of described them as a pocket party, how those so-called pocket parties try to differentiate themselves from each other?
I can tell you one thing. There are different names, Democratic Party for Economic Reforms, I don't know, the Agrarian Party. It is called in different ways. Yeah. They have different names, but they don't have any specific agenda. This week, we wanted to hold a debate between the leader of the Social Democratic Party and one of the leading parties, I mean, including those five other pocket parties. One of the leaders of the party, off the record, told us that he was told by the ruling party members not to attend the debate, otherwise he would lose the one seat that he was promised. So you can imagine that how powerful is the ruling party.
Yeah.
All the governors of local administrations, including that the chairmen of mahallas, neighborhoods, starting ministries, majority of them are members of this party. It looks like, you know, communist party in the Soviet time.
So,
and they have the youth wings as well. It's unbelievably, you know, a strong party with the huge financial resources, and it is ready to swallow the whole country.
Wow. So, Muhammadjan, you guys are supporting the Social Democratic Party of Tajikistan. Any idea how many candidates the party is fielding?
They nominated five candidates for the parliamentary elections.
Five candidates. So,
yes.
When you look into their campaigning, other than financial problems that Sirajuddin just mentioned, what has been some of the other challenges? I mean, were they free to campaign the way they wanted?
Probably financial problems. They don't have enough money to print out posters for the election. Right. They cannot use brochures, and they don't have such a volunteers to do independently propaganda for them. And also when the activists of opposition, they are the stickers they are putting on the wall or on the you know, streets, the supporter of the ruling party, they will take them out, and you have to put them every day. So this is one of the problems the social democratic are now facing. But there are a lot of supporter on the social media for the social democrat also. Just to mention one thing, I think there is a little differences in the ruling party. They nominated 28 candidates, but it seems they want to put their people in the parliament as independent figures, independent candidates That's for the election. Beside this pocket party, I think they will enter some their people under the name of the independents to show the world that we have a parliamentary election with the five party and also, you know, some independent candidates. And another thing, almost 28-30% of the electoral, they are living abroad as immigrants, and there is no proper ground for them to participate at the election.
They are not participating now, people who are in Russia, for example?
Of course not. In 2015, I was in Moscow, and I was observer at the ambassador of Tajikistan from opposition party, and I saw only few hundred people, which the worker of the markets was brought by their leaders, they voted on favor of Democratic Party, like ruling party. And I saw them, they are voting from one, and they are voting from one door and getting out from another door and keep voting again. Like this circle is running. For example, 200-300 people, they are voting against 23 times. And only in Moscow, there is more than 100,000 Tajiks are living, but I was counting less than 1,000 people took part at the main exit poll in Moscow. So there is no ground.
But if they wish to participate, they have the option to participate, isn't it?
They have option, but it's very limited. As you know, Russia is the biggest country in the world, and we have only, according to the law, only at the Tajik diplomatic, so like consulars or ambassadors, they could vote. And we only have an embassy in Moscow and a consular in St. Petersburg.
So, Anthony, as Mohammed Jan was saying, like 28-30% of the Tajik electorates are in Russia. Given the regulation that the citizens can vote only at the Tajik diplomatic corpses, which are present only in two cities, I'm sure because of these reasons, I'm sure most of those people left out of this election exercise, because Russia is a big country. And on the top of that, most of those immigrant workers do not have proper documentation. So I'm not sure how much of a freedom they have to roam around independently in Russia. So from whatever aspect you look into this, it's a huge loss. See, so I'm sure you have opportunities to interact with the Tajik authorities. So when you bring this into their attention, how do they explain the exclusion of hundreds of thousands of citizens from this process?
I fully agree it is. And if indeed we're talking about one quarter of the electorate, in theory anyway, I mean, that could be a significant constituency if they were voting one way or another in particular. But as my colleague says, I mean, there are really few incentives naturally to participate in the elections. There may be incentives not for democratic purposes that may draw some voters in. But in the past, we've heard some terrific numbers from the head of the Central Commission on Elections referenda in terms of the number of out-of-country votes. On one particular occasion, I was told that 400,000 migrants had participated in the elections, and he didn't produce any evidence to support it. And the other issue is, I don't think the government knows how many people are outside the country, frankly. There are not really solid registration records that are necessarily kept. I did an observation at the embassy here in D.C. On one occasion, and we had 44 people come and vote in that case it was a presidential election. And you had to be on a list that had been approved by the embassy, and there were some people actually who had been turned away who were not on this list, who simply didn't register with the embassy. Now, another issue we have, and speaking of in particular of the Russian Federation, in the past, and I think it to some degree it persists today, going to the embassy or Tajik consulate to vote has offered a degree of peril for Tajik citizens living in that country, particularly those who perhaps don't have all of their documentation in order. This has been something that the local authorities, the Russian Federation authorities, have on occasion taken advantage of to try and shake down citizens of Tajikistan who may not have all the proper documentation.
Right.
So there are certain degrees of difficulty in voting abroad, although certainly the election law does allow for it. But the realistic number, I would agree, is likely to be quite small.
Thanks. So with all these challenges, the country is headed to the elections ahead of presidential elections that's coming up in November. So we have only 1 week left before this election to take place. So as we go forward, where our eyes should be as to what this process and its possible outcome might mean, and what are the tea leaves we should be reading as to where things are headed going forward. So let's continue the discussion talking about these and many other questions very shortly. Before that, let me recap the debate that today on the Majlis podcast. I'm joined by Anthony Boyer, Europe and Eurasia advisor at the International Foundation for Electoral System. He's joining us from Washington, D.C. Mohammed Jan Kabiri is with us. He's the director of Foundation for Intercultural Integration, who's also the personal assistant of Muhyiddin Kabiri, the leader of Banned Islamic Renaissance Party of Tajikistan. Sirajuddin Tolibov, managing editor of Ready for Europe, Radio Liberty's Tajik service, and Bruce Spanier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlak Owazi. I'm Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast here in Washington, D.C., and we are discussing the upcoming parliamentary elections in Tajikistan. So, Bruce, before I get into the future-looking conversations, let's look back and talk about how we got here. It's been certainly a rocky road leading up to the elections. For example, we had an unprecedented level of crackdown against opposition parties and media, particularly Ready for Europe, Radio Liberty, has been going through an immense pressure in scrutiny, where the authorities are seen using accreditation as a pressure tactic against our reporters. So what has been some of the ups and downs leading up to the elections in Tajikistan?
Yeah, well, sure. I mean, certainly, you know, ever since they banned the Islamic Renaissance Party, things were already going downhill before that. But after they banned the Islamic Renaissance Party, I mean, really, it just like went into overdrive as far as the government's efforts to consolidate power in every way that they could over all the aspects of the country, you know, the economy, politics, the whole thing. What can the ruling party say to the voters based on the record, you know, of their performance in as governing the country? You have 25% of the, at least 25% of the eligible workforce is outside the country because they can't provide jobs for the people inside the country. It's the poorest country in Central Asia. They're remittance dependent. They're donor dependent. There's almost nothing that seems to be going right. The president's family owns pretty much all the significant businesses in the country right now. So if you're an average Tajik citizen, chances are that your life hasn't improved at all in the last 5 years, because they have such a firm hold over the country. And like I said, their performance is laughable. I mean, there's nothing they can point to and say, are you better off now than you were 5 years ago? No, there's no. Actually, most people are worse off than they were 5 years ago, or certainly they're no better off. But, you know, this is the situation they have. And that's, I suppose, that speaks to why they don't want any kind of legitimate opposition, because there's certainly a number of areas that an opposition party or individual could point to and say, do you want to keep going like this? Is this the life that you're looking for 5-10 years from now? You know, and of course, I didn't even mention the debt that they've run up to China. You know, I mean, it's a failure. As far as the government's performance.
So given these issues in mind, Bruce, what the candidates were talking about, what they were promising to people, and how much it kind of relates to the type of challenges that you are talking about?
It's been hard to follow this election just because there's so little reported about the campaign. What the government's been going on for forever and ever is stability. That's their big claim. They can point to the Civil War years and say, you don't want to go back there again. They can point to Afghanistan and say, you don't want this to happen to you. And that's their argument for keeping them in power. It's like, at least our country is stable. We're not at war. But if you elect somebody else, then you're taking a risk by doing that. And that's pretty much all they can offer at this point.
So, Sirojiddin, I think you also kind of hinted to this, saying that this might be a rehearsal of some sort for the upcoming big election, which is the presidential elections, to take place in November. So when you speak of this election, what's the significance of this, keeping in mind the other elections in November? Sirojiddin, are you with us? I don't hear from Sirojiddin. Who wants to take this question? Maybe Anthony? Let's go with you.
Yeah, thank you. I think the question is, I think you're alluding to, is respective of a potential transition. Mr. Rahman has an unlimited potential to serve as president. That's been affirmed through amendments of the Constitution. But the question is, at what point will he transition this? And it would seem to be a rather dynastic approach, such as we've seen in Azerbaijan, for one, whereby it's fairly expected, based on certainly on the political trajectory, that Rustam Imamali may at some point take over. I think in terms of looking at this as a dress rehearsal, I think it certainly this election puts continues in place a very pliant parliament that will not oppose this particular transition plan. One thing we didn't mention at the beginning, I would like to point out, is that simultaneous to the elections to the Namayan Dogon, we also are having local elections.
Right.
Why is that significant? It's significant because the upper house of the Majlis-i-Oli, the Majlis-i-Milli, 33 members, several of these are elected by local council members, local Majlisis, as well as a number that are appointed by the president. So you have one half of the parliament that's indirectly elected by the voters that is very likely to be very pro-PDPT. And as mentioned, Mr. Ubaydullayev, who doesn't necessarily represent a threat to the ruling family, but nonetheless is a powerful figure, former mayor, currently chairman of the Mili, will be stepping out of that role. And I think it in addition, this really clears the way for potential succession in a very clean and tidy manner. Will they choose to do that this year? That's unclear to me. I think many have suggested that, yes, indeed, that will be the case. Certainly, they've changed the law to allow his son to run this year. They've lowered the age requirement to 30. I believe it'll be 32 or 33 when the election comes. So it's certainly possible. I think to some degree as well, it would depend on the health of Mr. Rahman. If he feels that he is unable to continue for another 7 years, maybe they do it now through an election, or they could certainly have an early election. That's one of the other options that seems to be used on occasion is holding an early election for president. So other factors that will determine that, I think, are in play. But this election certainly, in my view, paves the way to, for that potential transition.
Sirojiddin, are you with us now?
If I could throw in something that Sirojiddin would have mentioned, and I know the Tajik service has talked about too, is that apparently when Rahman went to Moscow last year, he received a pretty clear message from Putin that Russia would not support Rustam Imamali being president, certainly not at this time. So that's at least that's what we heard, and that's something that the Tajik government is going to have to seriously consider when they're making this move. That said, Putin's kind of indicated that he might not be around after 2024. That might be one of the things that determines whether Rahman will stay in power for at least one more term or not. He might decide that it's better to wait out Putin's official presidential term before he tries to make a move like that. Because, like I said, all the signals we heard indicated that Russia was against this.
That's very interesting. Yes, Mahmoud.
We heard also the same reports from the Russia that the Putin said if you want to give a gift to your son, give a car or horses, but the presidential post is not the gift for your son. And also, I think the Mr. Rahmonov is taking steps very carefully, and he is taking into account all options. For example, he will send Ubaydullayev to retirement, and probably Rustam will be elected as a speaker of the Majlis-i-Oli, the Senate, because in constitution of Tajikistan, after the president, the speaker of Senate is the second person, and he will be in charge. But as Bruce mentioned, maybe Rahman is running for himself because he hasn't changed the main ministers when in the new year. For example, Minister of Foreign Affairs, Interior Affairs, and the Justice, and also Security Services, they keep them. If he had a transition plan, probably he will appoint some younger generation to prepare them for his son. But it seems that he's not sure, and he's taking on count all the options. Maybe he will appoint his son for now as a speaker of the Senate. And also, before my colleagues mentioned that several people close to the Ubaydullah was also interrogated and arrested. And it was kind of signal to him, just stay calm.
Stay calm. Yeah.
I just want to add one thing more. To be honest, in the past 15 years, to me, the legislative structure in Tajikistan, including Majlis-i Milli and Majlis-i Nagon, seems to me to be as a rest house for the retired officials, for example, the ministers and the people who served for a long time in the government. And then the Rahman will send them to these majlises to just rest. And chill out. And they never took any serious steps except just legitimizing Rahman's power in the past 15, 20 years.
Anthony, just expanding on what Muhammad Jan has said, the way this process is taking place, if the intention is to help to legitimize Rahman's government, how does this help? I'm not sure if the international community buys into what he's trying to do here. So what's the point?
No, it's certainly not going to appear legitimate, and it hasn't. I mean, there hasn't been a single election in the country that has been rated as having met democratic standards by the Western community. Of course, the CIS observers will likely give it a seal of approval, and that may be enough. The question is not so much, at least from this standpoint, on the Western legitimacy. The question is making them appear legitimate to the people of Tajikistan. Now, obviously, people can see through it. I think by now they know that this is not a truly democratic system, although on occasion the parliament does some good things. It recently adopted the Convention on the Rights for Persons with Disabilities. It's yet to be ratified, so there are some things that are done. But in terms of the West, I don't think there are any illusions that this is going to change. Now, at the same time, I mean, if there was a semblance of opposition, it's certainly the case that Western assistance providers may be, and governments may be more motivated to provide some economic relief or incentives. So by really keeping this as a very transparently illegitimate, if you can use that combination of words, process, I think it undermines any semblance of legitimacy of this government going forward, and that only hurts the government's credibility to the international community.
And I want to assume that the authorities knows these conclusions that you are talking about, right? I mean, they are aware that this is where the process is leading them.
Well, certainly. I mean, there's a degree of self-delusion that's taking place here as well. But at the same time, I mean, we know that Tajikistan is still very, very dependent on the Russian Federation. It was mentioned also the increasing ties with China that are to a larger degree supporting the economy. But certainly, I think they find themselves in some degree between a rock and a hard place. But there's also, as I mentioned, a large degree of delusional behavior that seems to be taking place. Because what we have here, to be frank, is a failing state. And I don't think that there are any short-term fixes for that. And the long-term fixes are certainly painful to contemplate.
Mm-hmm. So, Bruce, I think we also need to be wrapping up the discussion very soon, but some of the final thoughts here. So the elections are happening under these circumstances. So, you know, the victory is not the end of the road for Rahman or his government. So what awaits for him going forward? Just imagining that he, again, dominates the parliament.
Well, I don't think there's any doubt he's going to, that the People's Democratic Party of Tajikistan will once again, you know, take the majority of the seats. If you look at their election history and the number of seats they've taken, it's always 50 plus in, you know, the 63-seat Majlis-i Namayandagon. So that's going to stay the same. I think one of the more interesting things that will happen during the next term or the next parliament's term in office will be what happens with the U.S. and Afghanistan. Because Tajikistan's been playing this game for years now where, you know, no one wants to see them fail, the government fail, because they don't want the country to end up in chaos and just be an extension of all the problems in Afghanistan. Now, if for some reason Afghanistan starts to settle down, that's going to be bad for this government, at least in terms of their relations with the West, because it will give the West much less reason to tolerate a lot of the things that have gone on in Tajikistan. You know, let's face it, the Western governments don't like the way the Tajik government rules the country. But like I said, they don't want to see it fail because they're worried about what's going to happen. So they continue to provide them with aid, and they continue to look the other way when some of these more horrible moves are made by on the part of the Tajik government. Even if Afghanistan doesn't settle down, and I don't see where that's going to happen much, but if the West is able to pry itself away from Afghanistan and lose interest in the region, they'll probably have a lot less tolerance for what's going on in Tajikistan also. And that just leaves Tajikistan with China and Russia, which is certainly both those countries will help Tajikistan, but there's a price to be paid for that. And I think all the countries in Central Asia prefer to balance their relations, foreign relations, with Western countries or organizations so that they don't feel like they're under the thumb of Beijing and Moscow, but that's the way they're headed. And that might be something they have to deal with in the next 5 years.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so final thoughts, Anthony and Mohammed-chan. So what's that you will be looking at going forward to determine where the administration of Rahman is headed with this, with the majority in the parliament? What will be some of the major challenges that his administration has to deal going forward? Let's start with Anthony, then Mohammed-chan.
Yes, thank you. Well, first of all, one thing I find intriguing as a possible source of change, and I would say that there are some parallels perhaps in looking at neighboring countries, specifically Uzbekistan, is if there is change to take place in the country, can it come from a younger generation of leaders, maybe within political parties, maybe, you know, who haven't been part of the electoral or the political system for years and years? Is this a possible avenue or change agent in the waiting? Is it a matter of a newer generation coming up through the ranks who will push for some changes? That's a question I have. We've certainly seen, again, this taking place to a degree in Uzbekistan, which also had an election that wasn't necessarily bringing about change on the surface. So I would pose that question. I think that the government faces many challenges. We haven't spoken as well about the possibility of some kind of militantism that we've seen surface on some occasions, either purported by forces who allegedly were loyal to the Islamic State or other forces that the government claims is on the one hand that it's safe there. On the other hand, they've taken steps to try and further persecute those whose viewpoints they find a bit too radical. So there are certainly internal issues, external issues, no easy answers for the foreseeable future.
Mm-hmm. Fair. Let's see, Mohammed-chan, where your eyes will be going forward, assuming that the ruling party is going to dominate the power in the parliament, where your eyes will be, what you will be looking at in terms of the challenges and the way the authorities handle that.
The upcoming challenge for the President Rahman and for the Tajikistan state is transition of the power. It's very important for them because there is no one opinion whom to support. For example, Rahman is willing to nominate his son, and Ozoda also has support from Western country and also from inside because her husband is in the power and managing the financial system. And there is also problem within the family will start after the Rahman. So the main important challenge for the Rahman and for the state is transition of the power in Tajikistan. So they will focus probably on this.
Thank
his power.
Thank you, Mahmoud-chan. But Bruce, how long Rahman, I mean, there's no challenge at the way it looks like, but how long can really he run the country? I mean, he's not really a young man anymore. He's not really as healthy as he used to be, but
that's a good question. Some of these guys hang around for a long time. Yeah. You know, very diplomatically omitted the fact that he's pretty well rumored to have a vicious drinking habit besides. So you would think that he's not long for the world. But and certainly he looks unhappy in almost every picture I ever see of him now. You know, he used to be able to smile at least a little bit. But he just looks grumpy, like he's ready to just go and take a nap and doesn't want any part of it anymore. You know, he might have to do another term. I would bet that if he does do another term in office, that would be the last one for him.
Okay. Terrific. Thank you very much, Bruce Panier, the editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty, Central Asia blog, Kishlok Owazi. Big thanks goes to Anthony Boyer, European Eurasia advisor at the International Foundation for Electoral System, Mohammed Jan Kabiri, personal assistant of Mohiyeddin Kabiri, Sirajuddin Tolibov, managing editor of Radio Free Europe, Radio Liberty's Tajik service. Thank you, colleagues, for your time and thoughts today.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. And this is from me, Mohammed Tahir, host of the Majlis podcast. Until next week, bye-bye.